What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
It's episode 134 of Catfish on Ice. Everyone, welcome in. This is your host, Chad Minton, with co-host Rich Howe and Kyle Perkins. Whoever said that there wasn't plenty of news in the offseason? I think we have plenty to talk about tonight.
Lots of stuff going on, that's for sure. I didn't think we'd have that much to talk about, but man, there's tons of news right now. So
we have so much to get into.
Awesome.
So we hope that you buckle in and you're ready for it. Thanks for joining everybody. Catfish on Ice Podcast, episode 134, presented by DraftKings, part of the Hockey Podcast Network. I gotta say, we just watched the NHL Awards, and we're going to open the episode with opening faceoff tonight. We already got two thumbs down from Rich, so I think I know how he feels about it. Two thumbs down. Really quick, before we go to Rich first, we'll get Rich's thoughts on the NHL Awards and what just happened with all the results. Roman Josi comes in second place in the Norris Trophy voting by the slimmest of margins.
25 points.
UC Saros finishes third in the Vezina. No reason to be up in arms about that. We kind of expected that. Tanner Janot finishes seventh in the Calder Trophy voting. I really want to hear what Kyle has to say about that, because Kyle had, you know, a lot all season. Really, we've all followed Tanner Janot and unlikely being in that Calder Trophy race all season. So I want to get his thoughts on him finishing in seventh. Alexander Carrier ends up making mm-hmm. the all-rookie team. Let's not overlook that. That is pretty awesome and really cool for Alexander Carrier. So good for him. Roman Josi finishes on the first all-star team. So that's cool. So, yeah, we got to dissect all this. We've also got to get into some other stuff. The Stanley Cup's going on. The Tampa Bay Lightning managed to push back and make this maybe a series. They're still down 2-1. The Colorado Avalanche have still asserted their dominance for much of this series. So we got to talk about that. We have also got to get into some trade rumors. Alex DeBrincat is the new poster child, the new person all over the trade rumors is Alex DeBrincat. And there are some Preds fans out there foaming at the mouth about the thought of trading for Alex DeBrincat. We got to talk about what a trade package would look like for him. You've got Barry Trotz out there, who is out there saying that he should make a decision on his NHL future here in the next week or two. Will he be in the Preds front office? And then, oh yeah, there's just some little minor news that happened a couple of days ago. Very, very minor stuff here. Yeah. But apparently the Preds have been sold to Bill Haslam, former Tennessee governor. He will be eventually become the majority owner.
Yeah.
So we have to get into all that. So, yeah, plenty to get into. Oh, yeah, then just to throw it all out there, to close it out, we're going to rank our top game shows of all time, you know, because we want to end on a good note here.
On a good note. Something fun to talk about.
Just like the evening news, they always show us like a puppy or they show us something happy. We're trying to do the same model on Catfish on Ice here. We want to leave you with something warm and fuzzy inside. Yeah. So we're going to rank our game shows. All right, Rich. Sure. Rich, the floor is yours. Give us how you feel. Just tell us everything about the NHL Awards. How surprised are you about this Roman Josi finishing in second in the Norris Trophy voting behind Cale Makar, who is very deserving? No one's really upset that Cale Makar won. Obviously, the dude is a monster. But Rich, floor is yours.
Yep. First off, Justin is in here. Hello, Justin. Josi was robbed. Second off, Lindsay is in here. Hello, friends. Josi was robbed.
Sensing a theme here.
Guess what? My sentiments exactly. So I sat down. We were watching it. I was all excited. I had my phone out. I was taking notes. I was like, oh, he won. And then, you know, they announced that Shesterkin won, which is awesome. Very deserving. That dude's amazing. And I was telling my wife, I was like, yeah, Saros like was in a really good position to possibly win that up until the last quarter of the season. And then they announced that Moritz Seider won the Calder. And I was like, yeah, Tanner Janot was in a really good spot to possibly win that up until the last quarter of the season. I was like, just kept going on. And I was like, I think you can sense the theme here, what's happening. But it boggles my mind that Yossi didn't win. Kale McCarr is definitely deserving. I didn't think Victor Hedman really put together quite as good a season and probably finished where he should have, but it just doesn't seem with the season that Yossi had and then the criteria for winning the Norris, you know, the most impactful defenseman, whatever. It just didn't seem possible that he would not win. And he did not, but it's all good. Still cool to watch all the other guys that won stuff. You know, it seemed about right. You know, Austin Matthews took home a couple of pieces, and it was good. I really enjoy watching it. So,
good stuff, Rich. Good stuff for sure. I agree with a lot of what you just said. Yeah. I'm real quick. We're going to go to Kyle and get his thoughts, but I just want to throw in here real quick a little interesting nugget. How crazy is this? Austin Matthews is the first Hart Trophy winner on the storied and historic franchise of the Toronto Maple Leafs since 1955 to win the Hart Trophy. That just kind of was a surprising stat for me. With all the history that franchise has, that they haven't had a Hart Trophy winner since 1955, that kind of was a little bit of surprising.
Did you hear, real quick before we go to Kyle, did you hear what Keenan Thompson said when Austin Matthews won?
No.
When they were leaving?
I missed it.
He said, it's good to see the Maple Leafs finally win something in June.
Oh, burn. Love it.
Oh, wow.
That was good.
Well, my younger self, Keenan and Kel, was like my show.
Oh.
Like the pinnacle of its existence was when I was growing up as a kid watching that show. So that was kind of cool to see Keenan Thompson host the awards. That was pretty cool. All right, Kyle, floor is yours. Let it all out. How do you feel?
So Yossi losing to McCarr, I do not like, but I do understand. Like, Kale McCarr had a special season. But then again, Roman Yossi had done something since that hasn't been done, even touched, since the early 90s. It's been 30 years since a defenseman had a season like that. It's hard to justify why that player does not win that award. Not saying Kale McCarr is not super, super elite, and he's probably going to win multiple of these trophies before his career is over. Igor Shesterkin definitely deserves the Vezina. He was a monster all year long. He stepped right in and took the reins and took King Hank's spot there on the Rangers. Then you get to the Vezina. Not the Vezina, the Calder. And I'm looking at the votes. And Tanner's down there seventh. Michael Bunting was third. I'm looking at their stats. So Bunting had 40 assists, 23 goals, 63 points. Michael Bunting also played on the line with freaking Austin Matthews.
Right.
So all he had to do was tip it over to him, and he's going to go score it, and he's getting credit for an assist.
Just stack the points, yeah.
Yeah.
When you're playing on a line.
Tanner
like that.
Had 24 goals, so more goals, and 41 assists. Or 17 assists. Tanner's also playing with third liners. I do not understand the love for Michael Bunting other than he plays for Toronto. That's a carry if there ever was a carry. Most of the other guys understand. Lucas Raymond, excellent player. Boston's goalie, Jeremy Swayman. Mm-hmm. Swayman had an excellent rookie
year. He did.
Anton Lundell, a very underrated.
There were so many good rookies this year. I mean, it was really fun to watch all these rookies really perform well this year.
But there's one I want to talk about. If you look in 10th place in the Calder, that's another Nashville player. Alexander Carrier was 10th.
He got overlooked all year.
And was second all-star team defenseman. Or on the all-rookie
The all rookie team. They made the all rookie team. That was really cool.
So
for sure,
I'm happy for Alex.
Yep.
Lindsay is absolutely right.
Yep. Number one on our hearts. Yep.
But I understand Yossi. I understand UC not winning the Vezina. Nobody really expected him to.
I was just happy to see Saros get a nominee, just to be in the top three and get to go to the award show. That was really cool. Yes, and yeah, no one should be up in arms about that. That was just cool to see him in there, you know, and he's going to win one. We all feel pretty confident about that. He'll get his. He's going to be around a long time. He's going to get one.
For sure.
I think it's a pretty set in stone thing, unless something happens. Good Lord willing, it doesn't. But
Those dudes just need to figure out how to finish the season. They just struggle. they got to finish that last quarter of the season.
All right. So here's how I feel about it. First of all, let's start with the Roman Yossi here for me. Honestly, I'm not mad about the fact that he didn't win it because of the player he lost it to. Like, it'd be one thing if the player who finished ahead of him was like not deserving or just was like just not in. We knew for sure he wasn't a better defenseman than. You can't say that about Cale Makar. So I am more upset about this whole voting system and how messed up how it doesn't make sense. Right. It's like clearly there was not a consensus among the voters. If you just look at the voting points and you look there was a consensus as far as the points, as far as Yossi and Cale were the top two runaways. Like, you know, Cale Makar with 1,631 points, Roman Yossi with 1,606. So separated by 25 points.
Yep.
But it's the voting structure and it breaks it down here by first, second, third, fourth, and fifth place votes. Here's what drives me crazy. Roman Yossi has the most first place votes he had six more first place votes than Cale Makar. So there were six other voters who thought Roman Yossi should win the Norris. And then he has Roman Yossi has a random three votes where he was the fourth place. That's where I'm upset.
Me too.
It has nothing to do with him maybe not winning it and finishing in second. It's when I look at the breakdown of the votes and I see that Charlie McAvoy got a first place vote.
Well, no offense, Rich.
We're talking about our captain here. No other allegiances matter at this moment.
He got three fourth place votes from
that
somewhere.
Makes no sense.
That's what has me upset here, because as close as this race was, maybe he wins it if someone uses a brain and at least gives him a second place vote.
Yeah.
You know, that's where I'm up in arms about the whole Cale Makar winning it thing. I get it. He's a freaking superstar.
He is.
He is so good. He's Roman Yossi 2.0 because he's younger, but he might end up being better than Yossi when his career is over with. I don't know. We'll see what happens. Yossi still has plenty of tread on the tires as well. So it's going to be fun to watch both of those players continue through their careers in the seasons ahead. But that's what has me crazy about that is the whole voting system. Christopher Martel, everyone knows Christopher Martel. I really liked his tweet talking about it. Basically saying, let me pull it up so I don't get it wrong. Christopher Martel's followed the team, covered the team in the past and has been on our podcast in the past, but let me get his tweet. He said, laugh out loud. How can you have the most first place votes and lose? Sounds like it just ain't weighted correctly, if you ask me. And I agree. It's the point structure that doesn't make sense to me when I look at this vote.
Yeah. It's really weird. Makar got a lot more second place votes. And I think that's where he made up, you know, where he took it or whatever. But two things, if you think that Charlie McAvoy, which he's an awesome defenseman, if you think that he had a better season than Cale Makar
or
Roman Yossi or Victor Hedman, you shouldn't be voting. There's no way. That's just insane. He's great. They had a good year. It wasn't anything near what the other three did. The other thing, the people who voted gave Yossi fourth place. I don't know who finished, like who they would have voted, but like, There's no way. The top three.
We can only speculate. Yeah, we can only speculate.
Top three are who needed to be the top.
Well, I mean, I'm sure Victor Hedman finished ahead of Yossi in a lot of people's ballots. You know, but I don't know. I got nothing for you there. This is from NHL Public Relations. So this is the closest margin in voting based on points since another Nashville Predator got robbed. And a lot of the people who followed the team more closely than I did at that time, I was following the team, but not like I do now. They came out and said that absolutely that was the biggest robbery ever that year for Shea Weber. He absolutely should have won it that year.
For sure.
So that was the last time. That was in 2012. It was a 12-point difference.
Yeah. Lindsay said, I want to talk to the three people that votes in fourth for Yossi.
Yeah. We're going to have them on, Lindsay. I'm working on that right now. Actually, Rich is our guru at breaking all the news and stuff. So he's tirelessly on the phones right now trying to find those three voters for
us. Lindsay's over there going, I'm going to come over there and talk to you. I'm gonna come over.
Yeah,
there.
Just surprising. Going through the ballots, going through the other votes. Yeah, UC Soros again. Like I said, I'm just happy he got in there and got in the top three. That's a really cool accomplishment for him. Just to get to go to the award show and go with Roman Yossi like that. That's just really cool, and I'm happy for him. He will be there again in the coming years, and he will definitely win one eventually. And then. You know, really, Kyle was just preaching to my choir when it comes to Tanner Janot. I don't see how he finished his seventh. I didn't expect him to win it by any means. Don't get me wrong, but I mean, man, just the disrespect that I'm getting for Tanner Janot now on a national level. I just don't get it. I know he's not as flashy as some of these other rookies, and he doesn't play for a big market team. But I just seventh place seems like a slap in the face to me. And then. For sure. I've been really big on Alexander Carrier all year. I've been trying to bring him up in other episodes, like because he did get overshadowed, let's be honest, because of everything else that was going on this team with Roman Yossi, with all these other players that were just having spectacular seasons. Matt Duchene, Philip Forsberg, UC Soros, Tanner, like so many great seasons from individually speaking, that it was easy to overlook Alexander Carrier. And so let's just talk about him for a second. He really stepped up to the plate this year. He was under an enormous amount of pressure to be a top four, legitimate, trustworthy defenseman. And I think his offensive game is only going to continue to flourish and get better and better as the years go on. But you want to talk about a player who really worked his tail off in the minor leagues to get to where he's at now. So happy for Alexander Carrier. He's such an easy player to root for. So it was really cool to see him on the first NHL All-Star team or the first rookie team, I should say, NHL rookie team. That was really cool to see. So
when he got the starting job this year, Dante Fabro was like, thank you. Maybe people will like start criticizing him now that instead of me. he's like, look at this guy over here instead of me so much, please.
So that's the NHL awards. I mean, not the results we necessarily wanted, but it's okay. Still, it was still a very special season for all these players that they were even in the races to begin with. And, you know, it was still fun to watch, but let's move along here. Let's move along to the really massive big news that happened just a couple of days ago.
Oh boy.
And that was the Preds are under new ownership. Former Tennessee Governor Bill Haslam. This came out of nowhere, guys. I mean,
I didn't know anything about it.
When
did
I saw
you know anything about it, Kyle, you never saw anything, did you?
No one saw it. Completely out of the blue.
It was completely out. They kept this so hush hush. The people that did know it was coming, they kept it quiet. Nothing leaked. But Sportico was the website that originally broke the news. And I mean, I don't know nothing about Sportico. I'd never heard of them before this. I'm not saying they don't do great work. They do a lot of data analysis and stuff. But I was just like, okay, I got to make sure this is legit here. Like, I really didn't want to, like, speculate on it. But it quickly got verified by a lot of different sources.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean – in the short term, guys, it's probably not going to make a difference at all. But in the long term, because first of all, he's going to start off as a minority owner and eventually buy his way into being a majority owner. So The only thing I can really say about it is that one thing I think about is if this team's going to move to having a more primary owner, that can lead to a more aggressive approach when it comes to offseason moves, acquiring big name players. I want to share Daily Faceoff. Go give them a listen. That's one of my favorite follows. Matt Larkin and Frank Saravelli really went into detail about what they thought about this whole change in ownership for the Preds. First, I want to share what Matt Larkin said. A part of what Matt Larkin said here on the Daily Faceoff, he said, "I think it's significant, but also the thing that jumps out to me is from the Predators' perspective, just what it might mean for their identity. Because you look at Bill's brother, Jimmy, the owner of the Cleveland Browns, he's really changed the franchise, made it more, I don't want to say a prestige franchise, but a loud franchise that makes plays for big time players." So that's what I'm thinking here. Bill Haslam has local draw. He's definitely not going to move the team. So no one has to get nauseous over that thought, but he might, if he really has that competitive fire to be a winning owner, maybe has a little bit of an ego and wants the team to win. You can't tell me that a couple years down the road, if we see a front office change, maybe they do move on from David Poyle. Does this team suddenly become a very aggressive spenders in the offseason to go for the really big superstar players? That's really what I'm pulling from this, but it's not going to really change what happens this offseason.
What are your thoughts, Mr. Perkins?
I think he's easing into the role. He does own a stake in a minor league baseball team. I was just looking into him a little bit in Sevierville. And the man's super duper rich. he was the richest elected official in the country.
Yeah, wow.
Whenever he was governor. His dad founded the chain of Pilot gas stations.
That'll get you a lot of money, probably. I hear the gas prices are really expensive these days. I don't know if that's true or not. But
I had to sell a kid.
Right.
Well, truth be told, here, if we're being honest here, I threw down $100 to buy the Preds a couple days ago, and they laughed at me. And Bill Haslam beat me out. So I tried.
It was a good try. At least you gave it some effort.
Yeah, I did. I mean, I had $100 laying around.
You got to think he's going to be competitive with his brother because these guys are apparently both very competitive guys because if you're at this level of business, you're not there in politics and everything. You're not there if you don't want success. Right. You're not going to be valued at $2 billion with a B if you are not, I want to have the best of the best.
It's ego. That's the word I'm thinking of here is ego. And I hope I want my sports owner to have a big ego. I know that everyone gives Jerry Jones crap, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys. He's a bad owner for different reasons, not so much because he has an ego, but I do want my sports team owner of my favorite team to have an ego. I want you to care. I want you to win. I want you to want all the glory because that means you're winning championships. As long as long as the team you own is winning championships, I don't care, how big of a jerk you might be somewhat or whatever, or maybe you have an ego and you're a little bit like that. I don't care. I'm not trying to go hang out with you and be best friends with you. I want you to want to win. And if that means you got to have a big ego, then I'm totally okay with this. So we'll see about that. And then also just thinking about we're shifting from an ownership group that was spread across 16 different owners. I mean, it seems to me like it maybe was more of a business opportunity for those 16 owners. Mm-hmm. And so maybe there were times where maybe some of those owners just didn't really care as much as you would like as far as the winning part of it. And maybe they were more in it for the business part of it, like making money. And like Kyle just said, Bill Haslam's already filthy rich. So I don't think he's in this to make a few extra bucks. I think he's in it because he wants to win.
For sure. Yeah, it was crazy when it came out and it was kind of hard to believe. The one thing is, I think he's not going to have his minority stakes. I think they said it would probably be into the season, next season, before it was all finalized. And it would take like two or three seasons to get him to where he's the majority owner or whatever. But I think Predators fans are in for they're probably going to get what we've always wanted for the past few seasons. I would venture to say we're going to get a new general manager. There's going to be some shakeup, and that's what we've been wanting. Makes you a little nervous when you think about it, but you know, it's what's going to be best for the team. You're going to get somebody who, like you said, he doesn't need the money. So he's not trying to, you know, get rich off the Predators or whatever. He wants to win, or that would be my assumption. The other thing is, though, is Predator fans are they might get a little sad because we really like our players and we don't like them to move around much. And I think if someone who's more competitive takes over, we're not going to be holding on to guys just because we like them so much. It's going to be more cutthroat. It's going to be, you know, how they do things in other teams.
And this works in all facets of business, whether it's a restaurant, whether it's any type of business or company. Yep. When a new boss comes into town, a lot of times that boss is going to come in and try to put their own stamp on things, and they're going to try to do their own thing. And if that means having to let some people go, or if that means, you know, like having to change all these philosophies or these systems. So when it comes to owning an NHL team, that probably entails, you know, making some really bold moves, some crazy moves, and it's going to start from the top down, which means it's going to start in the front office and then work its way down. Mm-hmm. But that, like I said, that's probably a couple years down the road. That's not something we're going to think about this year. No. But I will say there's only one indirect thing I'm thinking about, and this is just me being purely just speculating here. I want to see what you guys think. I don't have a scoop. Sorry, okay. I don't. But I want to see what you guys think about this. Do you think that in the back of his head, David Poile is maybe a little bit more nudged to be, or being pushed even more now to be like, you know what? I'm going for broke this offseason. I've got the cap space. I've got to make a move here. And no one's going to criticize me for making a big move here because I've got all this cap space. A lot of people are telling me to, actually. So why not? If you're David Poile right now, if I was David Poile, that's exactly what I would do right now. I would go for broke. I would swing for the fences. I would try to land me a really expensive player while also trying to keep Philip Forsberg. Mm-hmm. I would try to pull both of them off and go all in for 2022-23.
Just don't sell off a bunch of picks and prospects. That's all I ask.
But it's so hard to achieve both. You've either got to do one or the other. And I don't know if David Poile wants to. Maybe he does. Maybe his heart's in the right place and he cares about this franchise so much that he wants to do the right thing, even if it's the longer road to that. But David Poile might decide, you know what? Screw this. I'm not taking the long road anymore because my days are numbered all of a sudden. I'm going to take this shortcut here. I'm going to ship off all these prospects that I got to wait 3 or 4 years to even see hit the ice. Yeah, and I'm going to go get me an Alex DeBrincat, or I'm going to go get me a whoever's out there that's a big player right now. David Pastrnak. Yeah, I love how you keep slipping that in.
Just gives me the chills thinking about it.
It's like the Lion King.
David Pastrnak.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I mean, Rich, if they get David Pastrnak,
I don't even know what I'll do.
Then I'm pretty sure Rich will like be the first person to buy his jersey.
Probably.
He's going to be. I don't know. He's going to be probably stiff. He's going to be stiff arming people at the grand opening of the Predators merchandise store the day those jerseys go. He's going to be stiff arming like 14-year-olds to get in the door to buy a Pastrnak jersey.
I'll knock down a 14-year-old. I doubt it. I might not because I don't know how long he'd be here.
13-year-old.
If he signs a 7-year deal,
then I would definitely get a jersey.
Rich is going to draw the line at 13-year-olds. He's not going to stiff arm a 13-year-old, but he will definitely stiff arm a 14-year-old for a Pastrnak jersey.
You're almost the man.
Yeah, you're almost there. He's got to learn, you know, right? All right.
He got to learn.
But yeah, what do you guys think about that? Do you think there's some truth to that? Maybe like maybe in the back of his head, David Poile's like, you know what? I'm only human here. I'm really going for – I'm swinging for the fences this offseason. Screw it.
Yeah, I think so.
He might have already been thinking that anyway, but now you got new owners coming in or a new owner and, you know, his bosses are changing now. I mean, he's only human. If I was in his position, I'd feel the same way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think if I was him, if I was in his shoes, I would be on the phone right now calling Forsberg's agent and I'd be like, what do we got to do? Let's just get this knocked out. And then I'm going to start getting on the phone and I'm going to look for an Alex DeBrincat or somebody like that for sure. Because like you said, his days, I think as soon as he found out about there might be a new majority owner, I think he probably felt the pressure. I mean, the writing's on the wall. I mean, the dude, he's been here forever. He's been in the, I don't even know, how long has he been in the NHL?
He's been in the NHL for like since the 80s or maybe even the 70s. Like I'd have to do a quick search on that.
I'm pretty sure he was the towel boy on the first original 16.
Oh, wow. So back in the, so he was the towel boy for the Canadiens.
He's been around a while.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
So but another thing to think about.
Go ahead. You go ahead. No, you go ahead.
Another thing to think about is where Haslam has been in the public eye for pretty much his entire life. Very public persona, mayor, governor. I don't think you're going to have another Herb Fritsch that's going to sit in the background. I don't think you're going to have somebody that's going to be you're never going to hear from. Because he's comfortable with it.
Yep. That's a good point.
He's done it forever. I think he's going to end up being the face of the ownership. I'm sure Sean Henry is going to be retained and kept in his role, but I don't think he's going to be, whenever it's the owners talking, I believe it'll probably be Haslam talking after he gets his majority stake in the team.
And for, you know, like from a marketing standpoint and from all that stuff, this franchise already is one of the best in the league. I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, they even fans who hate this team, like I'm talking Chicago Blackhawks fans, fans that just hate the Predators, they will still look you in the eye and tell you, I love going to Bridgestone Arena.
Yeah.
Because it's such a party. But I do wonder when Haslam does get into that role of majority owner and he really starts making the day-to-day decisions as an owner, as a majority owner, you know, what is going to change from a business aspect and from a making this a bigger franchise, you know, globally and definitely nationally when it comes to, you know, they're only the 26th highest valued team in the league. That kind of surprised me. I thought they would have been a little bit higher. That was the Sportico. They estimated the Predators' value at $680 million, which is actually almost $300 million below the average value of an NHL franchise. So I was a little bit surprised about that. You know, Haslam, as a businessman, he's going to try to up the value of that franchise. But I will say, what cures that? Winning, going to Stanley Cup Finals, signing big players.
Yeah.
That and so that's why I think that Haslam's going to be a go-getter. We're going to see a dramatic shift in the philosophy of how this team operates. For better or worse, some that might mean that we make some really big off-season additions in a couple years and they blow up in our face and we have to go through a horrible rebuild to the point where we're like a last place team and then we'll really see who the real fans are. But like I said, I feel like that's a couple years down the road. But it could also lead to getting an aggressive front office that hits a home run on some of these big superstar players. And suddenly we can do what the Avalanche did. Like I wrote an article like a month ago talking about following the blueprint that the Colorado Avalanche left behind. That they went over for like the last 7 or 8 years. The Colorado Avalanche went through this meticulous and methodical blueprint to build to the team they are now, but it took some time. It didn't happen overnight, so we'll have to wait and see. But it's really exciting. I was kind of nauseous when I first saw the news. I was like, oh my god, but then you know what, I came to reality. I'm like, this team ain't moving.
No,
Nashville is such a great city. Everyone wants to be here.
Yeah
So I quickly got over those fears. But crazy stuff though, no one saw that coming.
It is, there's going to be some changes. There might be some growing pains, but you know.
Thing I wanted to share from Matt Larkin's quote, because it was so good what he said. He said, if you look at the Nashville Predators in the cap era, usually they're spending. I was looking at the past 5 or 6 seasons, and they're always at the bottom half of the league in their cap spending. So that goes right back to the whole being aggressive spenders, taking chances. So he's wondering if the new ownership and this new identity with this new ownership, if they will become a more aggressive franchise that tries to target the Johnny Gaudreaus of the world, spend to the very tip of the cap, spend extra money, whatever it is. That's what jumped out to Matt Larkin. So that's what really stood out to me, though, is that comment from Matt Larkin on the Daily Faceoff. Yep. So good
might
stuff
be a,
there.
It might be a whole shift of instead of, you know, relying on prospects 3 or 4 years down the road, you're going to swing for the fence and get some big guys in your prospect pool, which, you know, the Predators always had a pretty decent one. Might not be that great. You just never know. Who knows what's going to happen. So,
speaking of which, our next segment we're about to get to, we're going to talk about the player that's really leading all trade rumors right now, and that's a division rival, a player on a division rival, and that's Alex DeBrincat. Before we get to that, let's tell you about DraftKings. They are our sponsor, and this is probably your last – this is definitely going to be your last chance to get in on this offer. This pursuit for the Stanley Cup final has been on. We've been watching the Stanley Cup playoffs for a while now, and they've been so exciting all year, and – it is game four on Thursday night between the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Colorado Avalanche. And you can still take advantage of our DraftKings offer right now. All you got to do right now is just bet $5 on any team to win in this Stanley Cup. And you can bring back $100 in free bets. That's all you got to do. I mean, I just feel like, so first of all, who you got in game four, guys? Who do you got in game four? Lightning are down 2-1 in the series. Rich, who do you got?
Man, I really want to say Colorado, but you just can't count Tampa Bay out. I mean, they were dominant in the last game. So I'm going to go – I think Tampa Bay is probably going to get the next
one. You're going to think they're going to tie the series?
Yeah, I think they might. They're home. They're tough.
I didn't see that coming. I didn't expect that prediction from you.
I'm trying to be realistic.
What way to be objective. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm
that,
being Rich. Objective. I'm not voting with, you know, my thoughts and whatever. But
your heart.
Yeah, my heart.
What about you, Kyle? What do you think? Do you think the Avs take a stranglehold on this series, go up 3-1? Or you think Tampa has figured it out and they're going to tie this thing up?
Tampa's hard to handle at home.
Yes, they are.
They're a tough nut to crack in that building. It's going to be loud. It's going to be – I really don't know.
It's so hard to call. It's such a hard series to call.
Because you've had lopsided games both ways. And the home teams have won every game so far. So, and it's not a series till the road team wins.
That's a good point. Right. Yep.
That's a good point.
All right. So it sounds like you're taking Tampa. Yeah. I'm going to shift off of you guys. Now I'm going to take Colorado in game four. Right. I'm sorry, guys. I just think Colorado is just they might. I'm not trying to be overdramatic here. I actually think Colorado might not only become the next dynasty, but also I think they could end up being a generationally great team when it's all said and done because their table is set for them. It's not like they're a team that went all for broke this year and they're not gonna be very good next year or something. No, this team is set up to be dominant for a while, and I mean every time I just look at this team and I just think about all these weapons they have and all these different waves of players. And it's like, even if they lose one of them next season or you know, whatever happens, they've got so many players in the pipeline and they're just so deep. Their roster is so deep. And
they are, that's for sure.
But in terms of right now, game four, I think the Avs are going to win. I'm hoping that it's a closer game. I'm tired of seeing these blowouts, but I do think that Colorado is going to win game four. And then I really want to jump into the future, my original prediction was Avs in six. So I'll take Colorado to win game four. I'll take Tampa to not give up and not go without fighting. And they'll win game five. And then Colorado closes them out in game six. I'll stick with my original prediction of Avs in six. But I'll tell you one thing. If Tampa does tie this series at two, get ready for it. That game five, sign me up for it. I cannot wait for it. If somehow Tampa ties it at two.
It is crazy. Did you guys see that when the 7-0 blowout that John Cooper wanted to take Vasilevsky out and Vasilevsky wanted to stay in? I thought that was pretty cool. It's like he's like – you know, I'm going to stay in. I'm going to stick this out. I'm going to try to learn something. And you know, I'm not just going to just give up or whatever, even though, you know, they were getting killed or whatever and wound up getting murdered. But I thought that was good. He's awesome. He's a really good goaltender. Yep.
All right. So that would be who we're betting on the DraftKings Sportsbook app. So now go download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code THPN. Bet $5 on any NHL team to win, Colorado or Tampa, and get $100 in free bets no matter what. That's code THPN at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See our show notes for details on gambling help if you have a gambling problem. Also do same-game parlays. Looking to turn a small bet into a big payday during the playoffs? With DraftKings, you can do that. Create your own parlay by combining multiple bets like which team will win, how many goals will be scored, and more. It's your shot and an even bigger payout. And DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, and more. You can also, best of all, you can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. It's super easy to do. When you cash out big, you get your money quick. So that's the best part about it. So go do that. DraftKings Sportsbook app, promo code THPN for the Stanley Cup Final game for this Thursday. All right, so we just got done talking about the Preds eventually becoming a more aggressive team down the road as Bill Haslam becomes the primary majority owner. But let's talk about this offseason. Let's talk about, like, I don't know, like a couple weeks from now when NHL free agency opens up on July 13th. By the way, we will be doing a free agency special episode that very evening to react to all the free agency happenings.
Lots of
news. It's going to be the day before I drive to St. Petersburg, Florida to move to Tampa, St. Pete. So that will be a lot of fun. My car will be packed. I'll be getting ready to do a 10-hour drive to move to my new home.
He'll have his Tampa Bay Lightning antenna flag on his car.
I need y'all to stop that. All this speculation about me becoming a Tampa Bay Lightning fan just needs to stop, first of all.
Driving in his car with his face painted blue. I'm going to Tampa. Look at me.
I'm moving to St. Pete, and actually St. Petersburg cannot stand people from Tampa. It's like a little rivalry. Yeah, like both towns don't like each other.
Join the club sounds like my favorite city.
So yeah, I'm not becoming a Tampa Bay Lightning fan. Preds gold is in my blood. Like, seriously, it's not going to happen. All right.
One of my really good friends who's a Penguins fan moved to that area too.
He's not your friend.
Yeah, he is. He's one of the guys that got me into hockey. I gotta say that.
Yeah.
But he moved to that same area and I'm like, man, your team's playing good. He's like, yeah, I don't know. Crosby's not looking at it. I was like, no, the Bolts. And then he'll block me for 2 or 3 days.
That's funny.
So let's talk about Alex DeBrincat for a second here. Let's be hypothetical here. There's a lot of fans that are like, I would love, overwhelmingly speaking, I'm getting that fans would love to have him and trade for. I would too. Trust me.
I would.
I would also love to have $1 million delivered to my mailbox tomorrow morning and just not have to work for a while, but it's probably not going to happen, you know? Like, so I just think it's really far fetched for us to get our hopes up about trading for Alex DeBrincat. I just don't see how. For one, and I think Kyle has mentioned this when we've touched on this previously, I don't see how that the Blackhawks are going to play ball with the Predators. No. And I don't see the Blackhawks trading DeBrincat within the division. Is my biggest sticking point with it. And my second sticking point with it is the Predators, for them to trade for Alex DeBrincat, they would pretty much have to say, you know what? We're throwing our whole youth movement into the garbage. Like, that didn't work. We were wrong. It didn't work. We don't like some of these young players after all. We're going all in for 2022-23. That's what that would be. Because the biggest part about this is Alex DeBrincat is going to be a restricted free agent after next season. He is going to get a ridiculously high and well-deserved pay raise. He's at $6.4 million right now. So you got to think down the road. So really all I'm thinking about right now is that Alex DeBrincat is going to be a very expensive one-year rental for any team that goes after him. And that's what I would see from the Predators. Unless they figured out, if they did trade for him and they did re-sign him to an expensive contract next offseason, well, then you better figure out what you're going to do with Ryan Johansson. You better figure out what you're going to do with – you know, some of these other expensive players because you can't afford them all next offseason. So it comes off as a one-year rental if you trade for Alex DeBrincat. What are you thinking, Kyle, about
it? Where he's RFA, you have to qualify him.
Yeah.
So, personally, this kid has averaged 61.4 points per season, including a season with 52 games in it. He's had two 41-goal seasons. His lowest season was 18 goals and 27 assists. I'm sorry, and he's only 24.
Yep.
So if you get him as RFA this next year, he'll turn 25. You sign him to an 8-year contract extension at the end of this RFA year. He's going to be 33 at the end of it. That's not bad. Mm-mm. That's not bad at all. And you know what? He's worth the money.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to be mad if they go out and get a guy like this and pay him big money because he's worth big money.
He absolutely is worth it for sure.
And my biggest thing other than his play is just the leadership this kid has shown on a terrible team, that he was the guy that stood up and took ownership for the screwed up crap that his team has done in the past. He was the only one on this team that did it, and he wasn't even there. He was still in high school playing Pee-wee hockey when all this happened. And he was the one guy on this team that stood up and said, hey, we were bad. We did bad things. We should be ashamed of this. His moral character is something that I like, and I want players like that on my team. Mm-hmm. So if they go out and make a swing at him, I'm fine with it. But like Chad said, I don't really see Chicago trading in the division. That's setting yourself up. It's just like whenever Nashville traded Seth Jones, they weren't going to trade him to the Blackhawks originally. Mm-hmm. They weren't going to trade him to Dallas or somewhere like that. It's just one of those things you just don't do. So
right. I haven't seen what's everybody saying that Chicago is going to want for him.
Oh, okay. So yeah, that part out there is another thing that's got me. And he deserves. I mean, I think it's fair what they're asking for him. Yeah. But I mean, they want a very high quality young player from a team. Okay. So I'm thinking like a Philip Tomasino caliber type of player. They're wanting probably multiple high draft picks, and then they're definitely wanting at least one very highly rated prospect. So, and that's probably at the minimum, but definitely I'm thinking like a very like huge trade package. And for some reason, the first player I always think about when I think young player in a trade package involving the Nashville Predators, Philip Tomasino is the first player I think about every time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, cause I don't think Ellie Tolvanen has a ton of trade value right now. And then, I mean, Alexander Carrier would probably get a lot of interest in a trade package, but no way Nashville's parting ways with him.
I would hope not.
But Kyle's all in. So I want to hear, Kyle, what if you were GM and you were going to do it? What's a realistic? I mean, it's going to hurt either way. But you're getting Alex DeBrincat, so
for sure going to hurt.
So what would you be willing to offer? Would you be willing to part ways with the Philip Tomasino in a trade package for DeBrincat?
Yes. I would send a first, probably a second.
That's your Tomasino, two high draft picks.
Dante Fabro.
There you go.
I mean,
that would fit their criteria of what they're asking for.
Yeah.
DeBrincat is a game changing forward. The only thing is Nashville has a problem at center. Center is the issue. They have so many of them, so many centers, because they went after so many of them for so many years because they never could have a number one center.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Granlund, Duchesne, who Duchesne's better as a wing.
Keep him at wing. At this point in his career, keep him at wing.
He's a better winger than he is a center. Tomasino is a natural center. Cody Glass is a natural center. you just got Colton Sissons is a natural center. Mm-hmm. Then you've got, if you go down even farther the lineup, Tommy Novak is good enough to play in the NHL, who's a natural center.
Tommy Novak's another player that I could see being offered in a trade package that a team that another team would really love to have.
On a rebuilding team like Chicago, Tommy Novak would be a good kid to have.
So don't overlook him either. I thought about him as well.
Since they're kind of rebuilding a little bit, do you think they would be more apt to trade with Nashville since they're going to be hurting?
It's possible. For, I mean,
that's the only way that I see Chicago trade.
They're going to have so many suitors, though, that they're going to be able to be very, very selective. And unless they just really love what Nashville offers as far as what you just said, Rich, about younger pieces for their rebuild, then they might be enticed to do that. They might be like, you know what? We don't care that you're in our division. We really like player A, player B, and player C that you're offering us, and you're throwing in a first and a second round draft pick.
Yep.
This is going to be great for our rebuild that we're looking to do. Mm-hmm. You know what? Screw it. You can have him. But I just, man, could you imagine that big of an interdivision trade like that as far as, like, you bring up Dante Fabro. That's an interesting one. I do think that there's teams out there who would love to have Dante Fabro. I know he's not as flashy and he doesn't put up all the goals and the points like we like to see, but Dante Fabro is still a very good defensive defenseman.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of teams out there who would love to have him, especially a rebuilding team. So that's good. I really didn't think about Dante Fabro in this sense of this trade package here, but
that's the whole thing though, with this whole new, you know, we're talking about the ownership thing and all that, you know, changes are going to have to happen, and it's like you said, some of them are going to hurt, and we're going to lose some guys who we really like, but man, you got to do it. If you want to be successful and you want to get a big name player bigger than what we have, you know, you just got to do it. There's no other way around it.
Well,
you're not going to draft somebody like
that. I don't know if we're going to see DeBrincat necessarily, but I do think we're going to see a pretty big move this year, this offseason here in a few weeks. I really do. Poyle has to do something here. He's got too much cap money to just sit on it and not do something. He's going to get way more criticism for, I'll use the whole baseball terminology of, if he just keeps the bat on his shoulder and doesn't swing with all this cap space, he's going to get way more criticism for that than if he goes out there, goes out swinging and tries to make something happen for next season. And then maybe it doesn't work out, but at least you went out there and you did your job as a general manager, which is to go out there and acquire talent and acquire, you know, players. You know, you even came out and was very brutally honest in the press conference in the season saying, look, I didn't give John Hines enough.
Yep.
That's why we're giving it. That's why we're comfortable giving him this 2-year coaching extension, is because it was me. Basically, it was on me. He didn't have enough pieces to compete with the Colorado Avalanche in the first round. So,
Plus, some of the pieces didn't play very well.
All right, we have another chess piece here to think about here. I mean, there's just so much going on here. So many different pieces, moving parts right now. Barry Trotz. This story just keeps evolving. I've been listening to Elliot Friedman's podcast a lot, because he seems to always have something to say about it, because he's in the know and he knows it all. But it really seems, and Pierre LeBrun of The Athletic actually shared this today, actually, talking about how Barry Trotz, we're expecting a decision pretty soon here from Barry Trotz on what he's going to decide to do with his NHL future. He's been pretty patient. I know he's done a bunch of interviews. Apparently I've seen the Winnipeg Jets as a team that he's done coaching interviews with. I really don't want to see him coach the Winnipeg Jets. I mean, that would kind of break my heart, but we were originally seeing him tied to the Philadelphia Flyers, but John Tortorella took that one. That's going to be fun.
That'll be interesting
to watch. Yes, John Tortorella in that fan base, in that market. Mm-hmm. Oh my, that's going to be
Cam Atkinson's like, man, really?
And he's taken
over that guy.
And Tortorella, he has taken over a project. That team is a mess. Yeah. I think that's why a lot of people are a little thrown off by this decision is, you know, Torts is like such a hard-nosed, like, coach, and he's going to come in there and coach a bunch of young players. The way his coaching style and his old school mentality. I mean, it's a weird match for me. But anyway, Barry Trotz was kind of tied to that team. But then there's this whole idea of maybe Barry Trotz wants to be in the front office, not as a general manager, but maybe as a consultant in the front office. And then maybe eventually he becomes a general manager for the Predators. Like maybe they keep the seat warm for him. Cause you know, there's a lot of mutual respect between David Poile and Barry Trotz. David Poile hired Barry Trotz as the only coach, and Barry Trotz was around for a long time. And it was a very mutual separation when David Poile left the organization. It was, you know, so I could see a reuniting eventually.
For sure.
It's going to be interesting to see what his decision is here coming up here pretty soon.
Yeah, my whole thing is, like, obviously he was with the Predators forever. And then, you know, if you look at his coaching jobs afterwards, he kind of got the short end of the stick a little bit. You know, the Capitals let him go because they didn't want to pay him. The Islanders let him go because the team.
I don't even get that. I still don't get that.
Yeah, I don't either. Yeah, it was totally ridiculous. And maybe he just doesn't want to be in that situation again because – That's the situation, how all the teams are now. Like, if you don't do something in 2 or 3 years, he's such done.
And he is such a stand-up guy, like philanthropist. Yeah, like, he does so much in the community. And he's still very active in the Nashville community as well and stuff. And so it's – oh, my God. That would be so incredibly amazing if David – if Barry Trotz somehow landed in the front office for the Predators.
Yeah, and this all came about because apparently he bought a house in Nashville.
Yep.
And then everybody just started, you know, digging in and trying to find information. So, but now at first it was like, well,
he loves Nashville though too. So we should, like, just that doesn't necessarily mean anything.
Right.
I mean, he has his roots in Nashville. I'm pretty sure his kids continued to go to school out here.
Yep.
And that's after he left the Predators.
And that's what everybody was saying. You know, everybody was like, well, he's got, you know, his kids still go here, whatever. But then it actually started getting some traction to where it's like, oh, you got, you know, Pierre LeBrun and those guys saying something about it. So there's probably.
And we were talking about, you know, I was talking about ego earlier, like talking about like maybe you like your owner to have a little bit of an ego because that could be good for your team because that owner wants to win championships. I keep saying David Poile. Barry Trotz is the opposite of ego. That guy has humility. He's so well respected by across the league. He's a player's coach for sure, but he has an eye for talent, building a team. He clearly did that through the rough expansion years.
Oh, yeah.
And quit. I mean, no one ever wants to talk about because they get so caught up on Vegas and the magic that they went on. But the Preds as a expansion team, they were really bad for like three or four years. And then they started making the playoffs like around year five, I believe.
Yeah.
And that's when, I mean, that's so incredible that Barry Trotz oversaw everything to do with that. And so, and he acquired a lot of talent. He developed a lot of talent. Some players who are still on this team to this day. And so, I mean, just if he can end up in this front office, I'm all for it, jumping for joy, going crazy.
If you look at another thing that was the difference between Vegas and Nashville when they started out is – when Nashville started out, they were not an entertainment destination.
Nashville hadn't reached that point yet. Nope.
No. And arguably without that team in that arena, I don't know that they would have.
Oh, no, you're absolutely right.
For sure.
But you look at Vegas is an entertainment destination. They're going to have so many people there that are just there. Like just hockey fans that are from other markets that are in Vegas. Oh, I'm going to go to a game. They have a built-in amount of fans.
Yep.
Now, they were building from scratch in a demographic that knew nothing about the game in Nashville. So,
yeah.
And, that's a good point. You know, Trotzy did an amazing job. I would absolutely love to see him in the front office. I think he could be a great general manager someday. Just because of his personality type. You're talking about the Islanders when they let him go, and that boiled down to if they did not keep Lane Lambert as their head coach, he was getting hired somewhere else. And they already had him to be Trotz's replacement whenever Trotz was done. It was already a done deal pretty much. So
there you go. Short end of the stick, though.
Yeah. It was like, sorry, Barry, he's our coach of the future. You know this, and he's leaving if we don't make him head coach right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I just
really weird.
I just wonder, does Barry Trotz still have the itch to coach? You know, like he's already achieved so much in this league. Does he still have the itch to coach? Possibly. But I mean, what are some of the openings still? I know, like I said, I keep seeing the Winnipeg Jets as a team he's linked to, but what are the other open? I know the Dallas Stars got Pete DeBoer.
Yeah, just
which
throw all the coaches in and mix it all up and pick one else.
That's right. But yeah, like I just don't know what's out there for him right now. It's a really good spot for him.
Florida is interviewing for people.
Yep.
I don't understand that at all.
I could not fault Barry Trotz at all if he wanted to take over at Florida. That team is ready to win a cup. Absolutely. They totally are. I mean, they totally fell flat on their faces these playoffs. Got swept by Tampa, but they're still going to be around next year. And you throw Barry Trotz into the mix as their head coach, then that could be a game changer for them. So
Their coach was the runner. Their interim head coach was the runner up for the Jack Adams.
Yeah, I don't get it either. I don't know.
And they're interviewing people. What does that show to him? I mean, golly, what else has a guy got to do?
Well, I also saw, and I think this was also from Elliot Friedman's podcast, 32 Thoughts. Apparently, a lot of teams were really interested in Barry Trotz, including like the Dallas Stars, but Barry Trotz needed more time to decide. And these teams were like, look, we got to figure this out now. And for so sure. maybe their first choice was Barry Trotz, but Barry Trotz was like, you know what? I'm not ready to make that decision right now. So you can keep doing what you're doing. Yep. And so, you know, those teams had to like make other decisions.
Here's your job openings right now. So, the Boston Bruins, they still need a coach. The Detroit Red Wings.
Oh yeah, Bruce Cassidy went to the Golden Knights. Yeah,
which was weird. Detroit, Winnipeg, and then Chicago. They have an interim coach, and the Panthers, like you just said. So there's five jobs.
I haven't seen anything linking Barry Trotz to the Chicago Blackhawks. I would hope that he does.
I doubt it.
I'm going to throw this microphone away and never talk ever again. You'll never see me ever again if he becomes a coach of the Blackhawks. Okay.
And I doubt. I'll
play devil's advocate
on
this.
All right.
If you're the Chicago Blackhawks, who have this unholy tarnished reputation right now, everybody looks at their team and it's just a scowl and a look of disgust. You take a guy like Barry Trotz, who is – everybody knows Barry. Everybody knows Barry's history, his things he's done with players. Jordan Tutu credits that man with saving his life.
Yep. Universally respected among players, coaches, media, everybody.
Exactly. If I'm the Chicago Blackhawks, I'm after Barry Trotz so hard.
Smart.
That it would make your head spin.
Absolutely.
Because he instantly brings that moral credibility to your organization.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't think they're smart enough to do that.
Probably not. But like you said, they could say, hey, man, that's in the past. We're turning a corner. We've got, you know, the top coaching prospect of all time right now. We're wanting to get him and just turn everything around. And that would be very smart on their part. But I don't see it happening.
No.
And I don't think he would go to Boston because they're kind of in a mess as well. With people. So I doubt if he would want to go that it kind of be not starting over, but it wouldn't be good.
And does he want to deal with that media in Boston?
Too? That too. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if he's, Yeah, that's absolutely true.
He's at the point of his career where he's earned his – if he wants to wait and make a decision, mm-hmm. Barry gets to wait and make his decision. If he wants to go wherever, he can pretty much say, hey, I'm going to do this. And you can't really fault him.
Overwhelmingly right now, I'm seeing Barry Trotz tied to the Winnipeg Jets, though. So
it's because he's from there originally is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was 3 days ago. Pierre LeBrun of The Athletic said, what we're told is that Barry Trotz is intended to make his decision on his NHL future around July 1st. He has indicated that to a few teams. So probably those teams we just mentioned that have openings. Darren Drager says he, Trotz, is expected to meet again with the Jets next week. So that was 3 days ago. Mm-hmm. So, he's probably going to end up as a head coach next season, I would expect. He wouldn't be doing all these visits and all these interviews if he wasn't interested. So he's probably – it's just a matter of who he's going to be coaching. But eventually – that doesn't mean anything as far as down the road that Barry Trotz gets reunited with the Predators in a front office role. So we will keep an eye on that.
We have
pretty much covered everything, guys, except for – we're going to close out tonight's episode with something fun. I have always loved game shows, guys. I'm like a nerd that way. Game show channel is like my favorite thing ever if I'm going to have to watch cable. But this is what gave me this idea to even have this segment. It's game one of the Stanley Cup final last week. I'm all amped up and ready to go to watch this, right? Game starting at 7 o'clock. Every time there's a big sporting event in any other league, there's like an hour and a half long post-pregame show, and they're doing all these different things and all this analysis. So I'm like, it's like 15 minutes before puck drop, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to turn it on ABC, the network, and I need to turn it on there and catch some of this pregame. And it's the Wheel of Fortune. And they took the Wheel of Fortune all the way to 6:59 and 59. I mean, it's like basically 7 o'clock, and I'm like, the Stanley Cup Final's still not on. And I'm seeing all of these updates on Twitter about warming up. Players are warming up, and they're getting ready to start the game. And I'm like, why am I still watching the Wheel of Fortune right now?
Yeah.
Why am I watching the Wheel of Fortune? I should be watching wall-to-wall pregame coverage right now on ABC.
Those games, man, they come on and it's like, oh, you know, they talk to the announcers for a little bit, man, and that's it. That's the end of it.
So that gave me this idea. Let's rank our I've got a top five. I don't know if you did a top five or not. It's okay, but I got a top five. I actually ranked mine because it's always more fun when you rank them.
That's good.
Okay. I'm going to start with my number five. And
first
of all, you can tie reality shows into this too if you wanted their game shows kind of. But most of mine are actual game shows. I've only got one that was kind of a reality show, but it was a pretty cool game show. Jersey Shore is not a game show. That's a reality show. This is a reality show, but it was still a game show. You still had contestants, and you were still trying to win a prize. Number five is Fear Factor.
Okay.
Old school Joe Rogan when Joe Rogan still had hair.
Yeah. And put your hand in a box of spiders or
something
weird.
Yeah. You would have to eat like the weirdest, like you'd be eating a tarantula, or you'd have to like skydive off a 20 story bridge or something. I'm sorry, but back in the day, Fear Factor was pretty awesome.
That was pretty good.
It was pretty exciting. And you can still watch Fear Factor on Hulu. I just found that out a couple days ago. All right, that's my number five.
That's good.
Number four for me is Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? When it first came out with Regis Philbin, I know it's still like comes on now and it's like, I don't even know who hosted, but I'm talking when it first came out, watching people win like $1,000, $2,000, $5,000. And it was like your heart would start beating for this person as they were getting closer to a million. And then they would do the whole phone a friend thing.
Yep.
And it was like the worst connection ever. Like the phone connection, like for sure, was so bad. And then it's like, I've always thought like, how horrible would it be if the call got dropped, like right when you were asking for the answer and it was for $1 million or something. But like how they would use their lifelines and stuff was always interesting. Do you guys remember Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I used to watch it. Yeah.
And then there was a, you could actually play Who Wants to Be a Millionaire on your PC as like a game.
Yep.
And it was on my PC. All right.
That's awesome.
Number three for me is, it's a GOAT. I mean, it's one of the GOATs. It's one of the OGs. Price is Right.
Oh.
With Bob Barker.
Yes.
Absolutely. See, that's not my number one. And I was like, please don't steal it. Please don't steal
well,
it.
Well, I mean, good, you got to think if I'm doing a top five that Price is Right is going to be there. But only with Bob Barker, not with Drew Carey.
Hey. Always remember to spay or neuter your pets. Yep. That was Bob Barker's.
But the best part, my favorite part about Price is Right is definitely the what was the name of the game where the guys like climb the
yodel?
Guys,
oh, the
yeah, the yodel.
Yeah, he'd go, oh,
and Plinko. And Plinko.
Oh, yeah, Plinko was good too. All right, and I forgot about Plinko. Plinko was awesome.
They had the putt-putt one. That one was pretty good.
That is the official show of being sick and staying home with your
grandparents. Yep.
That is the official show of that.
I did that. I watched that with my grandparents when I was home from school. Definitely. Yep. All right. Yep. Number two, another classic, Family Feud.
Oh, yeah. With the, what was the guy's name? Richard Dawson.
I'm not old enough to remember him. I'm not that old. Yes, come on, Rich. I'm not that old. I know who he is, but I wasn't. No. I'm talking about with definitely Family Feud with Steve Harvey.
Oh.
That man is so – you don't like Steve Harvey? Steve Harvey's freaking hilarious.
It's not that I don't like him. It's that it just it's like – it's all about
too much
being dirty. Like everything's all dirty.
It has gotten pretty – it has gotten kind of dirty, yeah. All right. Yeah. It's still number two for me. Number one – I'm sorry. It's the GOAT. It's the best all time. It's the Newlywed Game.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yes, the Newlywed Game was hilarious because you would always see the spouses not knowing stuff they should know about each other, and the husband always gets in a lot of trouble, and the wife's like, how do you not know that about me? I've told you that every day since we were engaged, and you don't I love it. I love the tension, the suspense.
And you talk about the double entendres. There was tons of that in that game. Yeah, always turn something around. And
I think I threw y'all a curveball with my number one. I don't think you expected the Newlywed Game.
We've got a couple of responses in here. Right. Mike Twitter's in here. He's apparently either at or watching a baseball game right now. So what's up, Mike Twitter? Lindsay said Fear Factor was great, which that's cool. And then Mike Twitter said Nickelodeon games, Guts.
Oh, yeah. I was a Nickelodeon kid.
Yeah,
and Temple of Doom. There was one called Temple of Doom or something, or you had to like kids had to run through
Temple,
like
Legends of the Hidden Temple.
Legends of the Hidden Temple. Where was it like a video game? You're in a game?
No, it was a show.
Oh, okay. No, that's what I mean. But it was, did it look? Okay, I don't know. That's what he said. And then he said, Bob Barker's awesome. And Justin Gambino says, no whammy, no whammy, no whammy.
Okay.
That was from, I can't remember the game that was on. I don't remember. I don't remember. So what's yours, Kyle? I've only got a couple.
I'm gonna do two. So my first one is sort of a game show, but it's the same people on it every week. And that would be Whose Line Is It Anyway?
That was good.
Yeah, that was good. That was
always funny. Enjoyed that show, especially when it was the original castings and just I always thought that was fun, but have to knock your Newlywed Game off because...
All right, that's fine.
The real GOAT of game shows is hosted traditionally by the man, the myth, the legend, the Alex Trebek.
You're right, yeah. I went against the grain. I went against the grain. I left Jeopardy off. But Alex Trebek is a legend, truly.
I watched Jeopardy religiously as a child. Mm-hmm. I would sit there and try to answer every single question.
You can learn a lot watching that show.
And not only is it a legend for being a game show, it spawned one of the best Saturday Night Live sketches that has ever been done.
Yes, it did. Absolutely.
Just so much stuff has came from that show.
That's what your mother said, Trebek.
And then who's hosting Jeopardy now? Isn't it the girl from Big Bang Theory?
They have her name? A few.
I think it's like a rotational.
Oh, they do rotation now? Because I thought the girl, I can't think of her name from the Big Bang Theory, but
Maeve Bollock.
I thought she was doing, I watched a couple episodes where she was the host and I thought she was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw a comedian one time talking about how you watch Wheel of Fortune, it comes on first, and you're like, oh, you think you're so smart, and then you watch Jeopardy, and you just really find out how dumb you really are. Yep.
You can learn a lot watching Jeopardy.
Nobody knows any of the answers.
By the way, this is the second straight. This is the second week in a row, second episode in a row where we've done a Jeopardy reference. We didn't do that on purpose. Oh, but, yeah, last week we did funny things in the interwebs. We laughed at the person who we laughed at the person who thought that God, what happened? Mick Jagger.
He thought that. Yeah, I can't remember who it was. God,
our brains are fried right now.
It is fried right now.
No, he thought. He thought that. God, Michael the Caine. Guy that's in Dark Michael Knight. Caine. What the hell is his name?
Michael Caine.
Michael Caine. He thought Michael Caine was Mick Jagger. Okay, so anyway, yeah, that's sure. That's our second episode in a row of Jeopardy.
We took a trip to Los Angeles several years ago, and we actually went and visited the set of Wheel of Fortune. Like, it wasn't during a taping or anything, but we got to see the studio or whatever. The wheel is like super small. It looks huge on TV.
Oh, really?
It is not big at all. Wow, and then they used to have the section where they would have cars and all that business. It is a little, very small studio. It's not big.
So they make it look, they make it look massive on TV, but it's,
they do. They've got a camera. It's a special camera. I can't remember what the name it is, but it makes everything look really big and wide. So, that was pretty cool. I like Jeopardy. They used to have Rock and Roll Jeopardy was on for a little bit. And I used to just dominate that.
I'm sure you did, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. It was just, not even a contest. But that was,
and a lot of those a lot of those game shows that are in syndication, they record, mm-hmm. like, 5 episodes a day or something. Like, they pump them because they throw them into syndication. So that's why that's why there's so many episodes of that, is because they film so many of them all throughout the year.
Obviously watching Price is Right. And then there used to be Hollywood Squares. That was an old one. The $10,000 pyramid. that's a really old game show.
I do remember that one. Yeah.
Yeah. So
they don't really do game shows like they used to, though. Mm-hmm. Like, game shows used to be like the big thing that was on TV every night. Now for it's sure. like, eh, no one really, but anyway, good stuff. Fun stuff.
Yep. Awesome.
All right. This has been episode 134. We appreciate all of our friends watching and commenting tonight and listening. Yep. Can't thank you enough for sticking with us through the off season. We had plenty to get into. We'll see you next week for a brand new episode. Everyone have a safe week, a great week. Hit us up on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram at Catfish Ice. Make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel. It helps out a ton. And we have been presented by DraftKings. So again, go get the DraftKings Sportsbook app, promo code THPN to bet on Game 4 Thursday night, bet on either the Tampa Bay Lightning or the Colorado Avalanche. $5 bet nets you $100 in free bets if that team wins. Go ahead and do that. Thanks, everybody. Stay safe. Take care. We'll see you next week.
Have a good one.